Just one thing before we do jump into today's show, and that is my Beyond the Game newsletter. Would you enjoy getting a short email from me every Friday that provides something to stoke your curiosity before the sporting weekend? Hundreds of parents, coaches, and community sport leaders subscribe to my free newsletter called Beyond the Game. Basically, it includes a short insight from me that I've been pondering during the week, a key finding from the latest research I've been reading, as well as a cool idea from one of the inspiring minds who come on this podcast. It's all designed to help you support your athletes to be the very best that they can be. So if that sounds fun, again, it's very short, just a little goodness before you dive into your busy weekend of sport. If you'd like to try it out, just head over to athletedevelopmentproject.com/newsletter. Type in your email and you'll get the very next one. Cool. Thanks for listening. Kia ora and welcome to the Athlete Development Show podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Craig Harrison, sports scientist, coach, and researcher focused on the developing athlete. On the show this week, I'm speaking with Football Pathways Manager and A-League Women's Assistant Coach at the Melbourne Victory, Gareth Turnbull. Gareth has been full-time in football since 2008, beginning his career as a football development manager for Coastal Spirit Football Club in Christchurch, and then moving on to New Zealand football, where he served as the High Performance Athlete Development Manager, the head coach of the National Under-17 and Under-20 Women's Programs, as well as the Football Ferns Assistant Coach. I love Gareth's perspective, not only in football development, but in life. And in this conversation, we dig into all of it. So if you see sport as a way to develop mentally strong, intrinsically driven, and joyful young people who just so happen to also be great at sport, you're going to love this conversation. Big thanks to Gareth for taking some time out of his holiday back here in New Zealand to sit down with me for a yarn. Enjoy. Gareth, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Craig. Thanks for having me.
I'm excited. I came across some of your posts on LinkedIn, which I understand are a relatively new thing for you and really enjoyed some of them. Stepping outside of football in particular, it seems. So tell us a little bit about where that's all come from.
Yeah, thanks. It's certainly stepping outside my comfort zone as well, sharing things out into the wide world. But yeah, it's something that's been on my mind for a couple of years. Been really fortunate to be across a number of good environments, work with some great people, and I've always been, you know, quite keen on taking notes. So I've had all these notes build up, and I think it's not just fair for me to sit on these and keep them to myself. So I was having a conversation with my wife a number of months ago, and kind of the idea of sharing them was something that was floated. And I've been a little bit nervous to get started, but I've made a start and across the various platforms, and away we go. So yeah, hopefully there's some insights and some ideas and some learnings that I've taken that maybe other people can apply in their own space and take it where it can.
And so when I was reading a few of them, I was thinking, how do you decide what to post? Because like, I'd imagine you've got plenty of notes, notebooks full of learnings. You've been in the game for a long time now. So how do you decide what you're going to talk about, what you think might be useful?
Yeah. Well, initially, I don't want it to be football specific. I think that's too small a market. So I'm trying to, allow things that can be applied in relationships or in schooling or in other sports or just general life. So that was the starting point. And then it's just a matter of, you know, compiling various things and certain ideas. And I thought, instead of just pumping out content initially, I thought, well, let's try and make this interactive as much as I can. Not so much for people to interact with me, but to share their concepts that might be linked to this, or how that resonates with them, and maybe that other people that read through the thread or the comments can also pick up on other people's learning. So yeah, I thought, well, let's have a content idea, let's pose a question, and I really enjoy reading other quotes and images and stuff like that. So I thought, well, let's go a question, a content, and a quote each week. I'll try and do this for 12 months, and and we'll go from there.
So what are you seeing so far from feedback, interaction? Are there certain things that are resonating with people? Have you got a feel for who it is that's tuning in?
Yes. So I've been going now 3 weeks. And recently, in the last week, I've had different people from different fields. Parents and coaches, and just other people throughout various connections, friends and business people. They all have kind of said the similar sort of stuff. Really enjoy it. This is a nice idea. One or two things might have resonated more with them than others. So they've either tried to, so a couple of weeks ago, the 0 to 10 scale around, which Tom Walsh and his coach Dale Stevenson spoke about in terms of priorities leading into an event. An ex-colleague sort of implemented that with his staff. He's got 8 staff, and he thought that might be a really good idea to streamline communication and when and when not to approach sort of certain people at certain times.
Yeah, that was a really nice idea. So why don't we dig into that and share a few of the details around that, and I'm sure people listening in will gain value, so let's have a crack.
Yeah, so maybe it's probably 5 or 6 years ago, I was at a high-performance sport HPAD conference.
So HPAD meaning high-performance
athlete development. Yeah, through my time at New Zealand football. And one of the offshoots was a breakout room, and you could select a couple of coaches. So I went along and listened to Dale Stevenson and Tom Walsh, fresh off, I think it was Commonwealth Games success.
So just for our international listeners, can you share who those people are?
So Tom Walsh, New Zealand shot put champion, back-to-back Olympic Games bronze medalist. And Dale Stevenson, his coach, was a shot putter, Australian guy shot putter in his time, and yeah, he's been Tom's coach for at least 10 years now. So one of the key messages that I took out of that half an hour kind of workshop was this idea that I guess Tom being the athlete and Dale being more than just his coach, is more of a gatekeeper of information and things like that. So the closer they would get to a competition, the less information or inputs or requests for Tom's time Dale would allow to try and protect his athlete from just staying focused on the event and performing. So they came up with basically a 0 to 10 scale. So a 10 out of 10 is something critical that Tom would want to know, even if he was about to walk out into the shot put circle and throw a shot put. So his fiance is in a car accident, for example. 5 out of 10 is something that's important, but not necessarily critical. So from memory, I think the example was, the competition time slot's been changed by half an hour. It's important to know because it might have an effect on his routine, is when he eats and all that. And like a 1 or 2 out of 10 could be, TV1 wants a radio interview with you or something. Important, but certainly not critical. So the closer the competition, so within 1 day of the competition, it had to be a 10 out of 10 for that information or that request to get through to Tom, and anything else can wait. And then 5 days out from the competition, anything that was a 5 or above, yeah, let's go and talk to Tom. He's got a bit of space to process that because it's, far enough away from the competition. So that was the general idea. In terms of priorities, in terms of communication flow, in terms of protecting people, in this case an athlete, from too much information to distract from performance, it was a really quite a simple concept.
Yeah, I love it. And I'm curious as to how that plays out in other areas. And so you mentioned you got someone, was it from a corporate environment, letting you know that they'd tried it in their team. I would imagine that this could play out between parent and child as well. Like, have you personally tried this in your world? Or, what are some of the details you think that this is really applicable outside of shot put?
I kind of had the same concept but applied into like a traffic light, so red, orange and green. So we had at New Zealand football, generally the doors normally open and people would walk past and poke their head in and engage in conversation, which is great.
Because what was your role at the minute? In the context of this particular story, what were you doing for New Zealand football?
I was in charge of the Future Ferns development program. So we had a group of HPAD level athletes aspiring to play for the senior national team and head overseas. So in terms of this whole space of improving players to their next stage.
So what was the age range?
16 to 22 maybe.
Cool.
So you want to have dialogue with colleagues, and you know, I'm all for ducking in and having a conversation and asking about different parts of the business and how that might have crossover. But at some points, you also need to just be focused and dialed in. So generally, the policy was if the door was closed, I also stuck a red dot up saying, I'm in focus mode. Please, come in if it's urgent, but otherwise, just wait. And then if the door's open, I'd stick a green sticker on the door saying, open for conversations, come and distract me. Or an orange is, I'm in work mode, but the door's open if you're interested in talking, come on in. But, if you can wait, that would be ideal as well. So kind of use the same concept in a different way. You can think of many ways to apply that. But in terms of, say, parent and athlete or parent and child, coach and athlete, again, create those parameters that work for you, and what space do you want to create around your preparation for an exam, or is it in the morning? Is you can't overload me with things in the morning, or maybe I'm a morning person and this is a great time to have conversations about the day ahead, or maybe it's the car ride home after training, really great time to discuss the training session and the learnings, but maybe after the match, maybe it's the emotion of the game is a red. So let's not engage in dialogue around that performance until the next day or until we get home at least. So,
yeah, I love it. I think those specific rules of engagement can be really, really useful. Keeps people on track and provides those boundaries, which sometimes you need, when you're highly emotional after a game as a parent or as a coach there. And you can see some of the things that would warrant a bit of feedback. Jumping in can often be good in principle, but really bad in timing. Mm. Nice. Yeah, I like it. Let's do another one. This is fun. Let's, what else? Maybe something that you haven't yet shared on social. We can get the jump on everybody else. Do you recall anything else that you've got in the wings waiting to push out, or something you can share with our listeners that, and I like the aspect of it being really applicable, a tool that they can take away and use tomorrow, which is always useful. I enjoy a lot of the theory and the blue sky thinking, but end of the day, it's got to affect practice, doesn't it? So got anything else for us, Gareth?
Yeah, I guess the an upcoming concept is around a sports psych term from Dan Abrams, who I was initially introduced to via the New Zealand football scene and Paul Temple when he was there with the under-17s. He has this really simple book, but some concepts in there. And the one that resonated with me and we applied it with the 17s back in the day was this ANTS, so automatic negative thoughts. So the idea is, as humans, we are inundated with negative thoughts, negative thinking, more naturally than positive thoughts. So throughout the day, you'll have a huge number. Could be, and they just pop up like, oh, the tea's cold, or oh, why is that guy banging? They're all negative orientated rather than just even neutral thinking.
Why is that guy banging? We just got going and we're sitting in an apartment in northwest Auckland and they're doing some construction. It's just constant wherever you go in Auckland there. They're building stuff and this guy gets his hammer out the moment we press record.
And we probably both had a negative connotation to his work, but it's nothing that we can control. It's just a natural instinct. So we get inundated with these negative thoughts that just pop up. So he refers to them as ants. It's a really clear way of understanding that's an automatic negative thought. So the idea of these ants, the more ants that happen throughout the day, they can grow into an infestation. And if we have an as a negative thought happens, a little small release of a negative hormone will be released in the brain. And then if we have multiple ants, multiple releases of negative hormones, it can have quite a big effect on the body's, not only mental state, but also physical state. It can slow the muscle contractions down. So it has a direct correlation to physical performance. So the idea of ants and trying to not have an infestation of ants is to do something about them. So I guess the first stage in this has been aware, oh, that was an ant. That was an ant that just popped in my head. And just accept it for what it is. They're going to happen. But then not allow more ants. So the way he would describe it is spot, stop, and then shift. So spot them, be aware of that was an ad. Okay, accept it for what it is, stop them. So don't continue with that negative train of thought. So don't turn that, why did that guy bang his hammer to go, oh, this is going to affect the quality of this recording, and then it's not going to come across great, and it's going to affect my downloads. They can sort of steamroll into an infestation of ants. So spot the negative thought, stop it, and then shift to a more positive outcome or a positive thought, just to almost counterbalance that negative release of hormones to a positive release of hormones, at least it's balanced, and then you can continue on with whatever it is you're doing. So yeah, I think ants is a really simple way to kind of describe sports psych and emotion and negative thinking and all that to younger athletes. They go, oh, that was an ant. So then you get them used to spotting them, and then certainly if someone says something out loud, you know, encourage them to go, hey, that was an ant. Like, just, you said an ant. And then, you know, that's not good for you. So think of something positive and then hopefully move that train of thought on to something different.
Okay, so let's dive into how this actually played out within the 17s environments, because this is cool to be able to take something that's very well evidenced around how the brain works, but it's become an analogy, which we know are really powerful, particularly for young people, but for all stages of development when it comes to learning. But I'm most interested in what you found when you applied it. So for example, I'm thinking the gap between noticing the ant and then not letting it ruminate is where the magic happens, right? Or even being aware in the first place, because it's so tricky to be able to catch those negative thoughts and not let it lead to a rumination of negative emotions. And so going back to the question, when you applied it in the NZ17s program, what did you see?
Yeah, I guess it's one of a few tools that we tried to implement. It just exposed these younger future performance athletes to the concepts of sports psych and how they can apply them further down the track. So I guess we initially started by just giving them the concept. And then asking them to, certainly if you heard a negative thought or negative comment out loud, just to sort of keep each other honest, hey, that was an ant. And then just gotten used to the idea of being aware of these things that pop up. And then,
so you would have some of the girls that would literally identify the ant and let somebody else know that they'd seen it as well.
We actively encourage them to say, "Oh, I just had an ant." So they got used to spotting it, and then by communicating, "Hey, I've spotted it," kind of keep everybody honest or aware of the process or the task. And then someone might say something aloud. Again, we would actively encourage them what was a safe environment to go, "Hey, that was an ant." So again, just gotten used to noticing them. So that was the first thing. And I actually was reading a book recently, and I forget the name of the guy that said it, but he came from a sport background, but wasn't a sports psych. And he kind of said the first thing he wanted to create change in this environment that he was working with was to get the athletes to stop saying stupid shit. Because he said, if you negative's way more powerful than a positive reaction.
I think the research shows that it's 5-1. For positive psychology, evidence will suggest that it's five times the power.
Yeah, which is a lot.
It's unbelievably uneven.
And then he alludes to the fact if you say it out loud, it's even more powerful than holding it in yourself, because it kind of gives its life because other people can hear it. So his thing was just stop the athletes saying things out loud. So
are you talking about other people or themselves?
Themselves.
Right.
So if you say something negative versus think it, you've obviously thought it in order to say it, but then by saying it kind of goes out in the world, then other people can be influenced by it as well. So I guess coming back to under 17's example is we want them to practice it, but if someone says it out loud, then hey, that was negative. You know, you shouldn't try not to say that. Like, think if you can think about it before you speak, obviously.
So you're referring to expressing the actual negative thought as opposed to noticing the thought, because yep. I see a differentiation there, right?
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. Mm. So I guess it was, let's try and just get used to this idea that firstly, we're going to have a lot of negative thoughts, negative emotion, and that's natural. We're humans and we're more wired to be negative than, say, positive. But if we can not allow those to ruminate and become part of who we are, and we can become more positive, that's going to ultimately have a better effect on performance, because it won't slow us down in a physical capacity as well. So that was, yeah, interesting. And how many of those girls still refer to ants and use it, I don't know. But it was trying to provide some tools for these future performance athletes that they can apply. Another really good example from that Semenins was this concept of a script. So, and you see this a lot now in professional athletes, where they have tape on their arms with some sort of message. It could be a cross for religion, or family, or a keyword. So this idea of knowing what my role in the team was, this is how we applied it, and write sort of three things on our script. So the girls actually had, you're strapping tape and bandaged up their forearms, and would write one or two or three messages on their arm. So whenever the game slowed down or stoppage, or they were stressed, they would literally look at their arm and remember, oh, this is what I'm here for. So for example, I was working with one of the strikers. So one of the things we wanted to keep her doing was be on the move all the time, keep searching, keep making runs. So she likened that to being like a shark. If a shark stops moving, it falls asleep or dies or something. So we had on her be like a shark, which meant constant movement, rapid, we're attacking, we're always searching for ideas. So it was a simple way for her to reflect on what we need her to do in the team in this moment, and kind of keep her in the present. So yeah, this concept of a script, which we did that, and we got not in trouble, but Oceania Football asked us to not have our arms taped up. But now you see it quite common practice, taping around the wrist with messages, the same concept, I assume.
Mm. It's so interesting that you talk about a shark. I'm literally at the minute talking to Isaac about being a tiger, and like, he's a nature lover and just started football, as I'm starting to talk more about on the show, and he needs to be a little bit more aggressive on the pitch, and so he decided that he wants to be a tiger. And but it's cool because it follows the theory too. Like, it brings the athletes back to acting in line with either, as you said, their role or their values. So and when you combine the two, you have the ants, so that's the tool to do something about the negative thought, but then you have to refocus by getting back into your job, or living true to your values and those sorts of things. So really cool. So I'm thinking as you're talking, over at the Victory, do you have sports psychs working in the pathway, or is it more about integrating ideas like this through the coaching?
In short, no, we don't. I think it's a gap for us in terms of our high performance teams, our A-League men's and women's.
So you don't even have them at the elite level?
We don't have exposure to them, no. From an academy perspective down, it's very much led through the experiences of whoever's leading those boys and girls programs. So the head of those coaching programs will have influence over the framework from a technical, tactical perspective. There's a head of human performance who will do the physical side of things. But through the experiences of those leads, there's an element of sports psych, or other tools around reflection, around journaling, around role modeling, not necessarily sports psychology elements, but other non-football specific elements that are really helpful for developing players.
Yeah, so it's pretty commonplace, in the youth domain, where that's exactly how it rolls out. If the coach has got a value around the importance of psychology, and then two, the experience with working with a sports psych or implementing some of these tools, then it shows up in the environment. Moving forward, is there thinking around being more strategic around that at the Victory? One thing I think a lot about is the integration of the support for our athletes, and at least having a framework around thinking and feeling can be really powerful, and then over time the coach applies that. Is that part of where you might be working towards, or is it still just reliant on the gaffer?
Yeah, I think from the professional element, it is very gaffer driven. So from our A-League women's space, he's open to anything. to come in and help our players perform ultimately, to get results, to win things. But there's also so much time in a day and various elements. And unfortunately, in the A-League women's space, you know, the players aren't earning necessarily enough of a full-time wage where they don't have other interests or hobbies or potential employment they have to go and do as well. So it's juggling everything as well as what's going to give us the biggest bang for the buck. So there is access to psychologists. A couple of players have used that tool to talk around other things that you know they wish to work through, but not necessarily around here's some mental skills tools which can apply, which, you know, I'm not a sports psych person at all, but I'm really interested in that field. So,
again, but you work with humans, right?
We do.
And it's fundamentally human is to think and feel, right? So it just seems fundamental that there's an aspect of what we do as coaches that delivers into that space.
I feel there's a real we don't know what it is kind of environment, and through coach education there's no, you know, there's no like component of here's a sports psych piece. We're not going to train you to be a sports psych person, but here's some ideas or some simple tools, try them out. Well, the whole idea is to help a player develop or perform, depending on what stage those people are in. But it's missing through coach education.
So where has the curiosity come from for you? Because you're clearly not only thinking in the space, but you're delivering into the space.
I think that initial exposure through when I came in as a support coach at the under-17s level, and just so happened that, you know, Paul was working through these tools with this really simple book the players got. That was sort of my first taste of it. And I was like, man, I haven't seen this before. You know, I was probably 26 years old, played reasonably decent level and never been exposed to any of these ideas. So, you know, I felt and I still feel there's a massive gap in developing the athlete in this space. So I just, you know, tried to slowly but surely implement those ideas. And the more I could read from Dan Abrahams and listen to him and other people on similar podcasts, some really simple ideas that I think anything is better than nothing. I think it's people are a bit scared to go, oh, I don't want to get it wrong and player goes backwards. So you've got to, you know, you can't just be gung-ho about it. But I think there's some simple tools and, just go and kind of explore about it and then try and see what works and then what doesn't work and refine it from there.
It's interesting, isn't it? There's a narrative associated with training or betterment of the mind that keeps people at arm's length for whatever reason. Now, and it potentially goes into the talk around mental disorders, struggles, and for no, at no point am I suggesting that we cross the line into those types of areas. It always requires a referral, but we're quite happily to, we'll show up and we'll coach technical and tactical, and then we'll add some physical stuff in there. But as soon as it comes to, you know, the mental skills, we're like, oh, how, we can't do that. It just seems interesting to me. But from my point of view, and this is for me something I've come to realize, is that it's foundational. It sits at the heart of the pyramid of everything that we do.
Yep. I would go further. Well, I agree. I also think the joy of the exercise is foundational. I think I've seen so many, you know, I don't like the word talent, but players of above average ability that are no longer in the game 5 years later because other things present themselves, be it boyfriend, girlfriend, be it further education, be it travel, be it part-time work. But the players that seem to stay in the game and progress further have a fundamental joy for their, in this case, in their football. So I think if you don't have that joy present, or it burns out, or never really it goes from, you know, I have fun to enjoyment, I think enjoyment's, you know, stage beyond its fun. That internal fire burns out and players disappear as well. So I think the mental plus the joy plus the technical tactical plus the holistic support, you know, there's so many elements that, you know, help convert a player from, you know, grassroots to high performance. There's so many stages in between. I think there's a lot of fundamental things that are critical.
Interesting that you should say that enjoyment is a step further than fun. It resonates with me. A frustration that I talk about often is we talk about fun all the time, but we never really dig into what fun actually is in a practical sense. And so can you take us inside your ideas when it comes to joy and what you've seen from the players that you've worked with and how you think about cultivating joy?
We can spend hours on this, I think. But for me, joy is, a step beyond. I'm just having some fun here. Like I could have, fun playing football, but what brought me joy was actually the action of scoring a goal and then the reaction after scoring the goal. That was joy. So for me, that kept me in football for, playing, 20 odd years, because I knew that was the main reason why I was playing.
Was that a feeling?
It was a feeling. It was a feeling that no one could really take away from me. And I think that got, developed over time. So if I think back to my role within Victory, people start something because they have, I believe, joy, or they find joy, and they might sample different sports or different activities and they kind of land on something that they truly, I think, develop the joy from, and that's kind of what keeps them there. So we have we use play as a cornerstone of our development. So in the pre-academy space, we use what I call play, coach, play, which is whole part, whole coaching. But just the language around using play rather than whole or game. So we play, and the first part of the exercise or the session is a 15-minute game where the coach doesn't actually coach. They just facilitate the constraints of the game. So the kids are there playing. They're scoring, they're keeping track, they're attacking, they're defending, they're doing whatever they're doing within that design of that exercise. Then we break it into coach. So there'll be a coaching element where the coach is instructing and asking questions and facilitating the learning that way. Then extension of that, so coach two. And then we finish with another game, which is play. So play one, coach one, coach two, play two. So play is foundational in terms of the time that we spend with those kids. And then every fortnight, every second Friday, so tonight actually, we have pack play. So pack being our pre-academy centres, pack play. We have a relationship with an indoor facility, and all the kids through their various ages at a different time slot will come into this one centre, and they play. They just play games. They come up with the rules. It could be 7v5. It could be you must score one touch. It could be you can play off the nets. We kind of allow them the space to come up with their rules. And we have one Melbourne Victory coach there, but he or she's not there to coach. He's there just to make sure that, if someone bangs head, that there's an adult present. It's taken us a while, but we've encouraged the parents just to drop their kids off and then disappear, go away for an hour and come back and pick them up. But there is, there's a little cafe there, so, come and have a coffee but stay away. Don't actively stand on the sideline and watch your son or daughter. We want to create the space where they are just playing with their mates, with and against different kids they don't normally see. And football's that tool. So, I think play is foundational or fundamental to kids developing that real joy for the activity. And in my case, hopefully that activity is football, which keeps them in the game as long as possible. Now, it may not always be as a player. It could be they might turn into coaching. They might turn into refereeing. They might just stay as a member of the club and come along and be a supporter. Maybe when they have kids, they had a really good experience in football as opposed to other sports, and then they might get their son or daughter into football as well. So,
can you take us on that journey a little bit more as to where you started out and how it's evolved over time? I love this idea so much, and I think that it needs to be much more pervasive in youth sport environments where, for so many reasons, like to develop joy, but also to change the narrative around what sport is for. Because all of a sudden, when we create environments like that, the narrative starts pushing back against this, everything is about preparing for the outcome on Saturday. A few episodes ago, I had Mark Upton and Ken Wilner on, and we talked about games hubs, just creating community spaces where kids can turn up and play in their child-led and adults facilitate the environment, but there's no coaching and there's no instruction. It's essentially what you're talking about, right? And so, but how did it evolve over the time? Like, where did it start? What were the obstacles in the way? And how have you got it to a point where it sounds to me like it's a great place to be?
Well, there's certainly still obstacles. There's certainly still parents that don't understand why we're doing it. The owner of the venue that we use doesn't necessarily believe it's the best use of the time.
Is it an indoor venue? Is it outside?
It's an indoor venue. There's kind of like a 7x7 pitch, 4x4 pitch.
So it's a big indoor turfed space.
Yep.
Okay. So these details are important. So yeah, try and colour in the spaces.
Yeah.
For
so
us.
Effective. Yeah. The facility is 7x7 pitch with nets around it. Decent sized goals. Then a 4x4. Ideally 4x4. People could play 5x5, and then a little indoor tennis sort of field with a net. So we use that as an overflow. People can just jump in there and, you know, set your own rules with one bounce or two touch or whatever they would like.
And are they always kicking, or are they sometimes actually using their hands?
Not using their hands. I think being football, it's one element that you can't obviously use in the game. But
Have kids tried to come up with games using? Because there's a lot of benefit from, in terms of diversification, developing skills around motor pathways
for
that
sure
don't require feet?
I don't know is the answer to that. It's something that, you know, we shouldn't be against. It's not like, I guess the space we're trying to create is for the kids to come and be kids. And I guess where the initial idea came from was we don't believe that kids have that informal play contact time that maybe you and I had when we were kids, and certainly generations before us, whether it's in the playground at school or, you know, after school down in the field with our mates. So how do we artificially create this space where
the science backs this up, Gareth? Like it's quite clear.
Yeah. So looking around the other A-League environments and clubs, it's I couldn't find it. So we were fortunate. We had this relationship quite central in Melbourne with this facility base, which we use for a raft of other things. It's where A-League Women's team are. You know, we start there in the mornings. We have our meetings there. There's a gymnasium upstairs. The boys' academy use it for the gymnasium. Or if it's super wet, we can jump on there and have a facilitate training session. So we had this venue already that we have a relationship with. So how could we maximise our time there and create the space where kids can come and be kids? And we see it's a point of difference. Parents initially thought it was around games and competing and, on the sideline cheering. I think there's time and a place for that. But, we've slowly tried to educate the parents
the game
around
on Saturday.
So we try to educate the parents around what this is about. And, when new kids or new families come into the pathway, they don't get it, they don't understand it, they enjoy it, but over time it's kind of got to a point where we think it's really valuable time, and also valuable resource from us in terms of court hire, in terms of staffing it.
So if I was a new parent just coming into the program and you had to sit me down and explain the purpose of Friday night informal play, where would you go?
I would start as, please drop your son or daughter off and trust that we'll care for them for the next hour. Go away, do some shopping, and come back and pick them up, because we want to create a space for them where they don't feel that they're trying to impress mum or dad. And also, I think in the utopia would be there would be no coach even standing there with a Melbourne Victory badge on. It would just be a space that's facilitated and dominated by the kids. I feel we probably need at least one adult supervising in case something.
How old are these kids?
So our youngest would be 8, oldest would be 12.
Right. What if you had like 16-year-olds there, 3 or 4 of them playing too? I'm not sure if you've heard the skate park analogy that I use all the time, but at the skate park, there's always a 16-year-old there that provides some aspiration. Like this is an opportunity for you to see the next level, and also to interact and to help teach, but it's not an adult. It's just someone that's a year or two ahead in the pathway.
Yeah. I love that. I think it's so important being able to see those next stage. And I guess where by default this happens anyway is the academy will be in there on a Friday night using the gym. So quite often they'll arrive and they'll jump in the football tennis if it's not on and just have a kick around with themselves while they're waiting for their space in the gym. So these pre-academy kids who have a victory shirt on can see this 16-year-old or sometimes older, sometimes closer to their own age, getting ready for their preparation within the club. So that's happens naturally anyway. But in terms of a random 16-year-old jumping in, I don't think there's a – you can't do this. And we've had a couple of brothers and sisters of pre-academy kids come along and jump in. There was one kid a couple of months ago that plays for another A-League club. His mate was in the pre-academy, so he came along and he asked, could I jump in and play? And we jump in and play. More kids doing this is better. Just got to be a bit careful that, you know, parents from a pre-academy player who are paying money ultimately to be part of the program sees other kids get the same opportunity. We've got to manage that potential fallout. But again, going back to your question, what are we trying to create here? A space where kids can interact with other kids to develop, yes, some football competencies, but hopefully it's more than that. It's developing a joy for their game. It's developing some leadership qualities of organising teams and, we're winning 5-0, so you're going to come and play for this team, or you must score one touch. Thinking about different ways to manipulate the activity to still be level and fun, which is what, you know, I used to do when I was 7 or 8 back in Greenhithe Primary, and we play on the backfield. That was the way it was. So, yeah, just trying to make sure there's a space where the kids can, hopefully they still experience that in their own schools. But if they aren't, then here's a space where they can certainly experience it.
One of the things for parents that I've come to understand is if you can show them some progression, then that's really, really powerful. And while I'm not a fan of measuring everything, I'm just thinking about the characteristics that these kids would be building. You mentioned leadership. I'm thinking about creativity. That comes through the edge of chaos. And so if you are going back to that question about that new parent that drops their kids off or is about to, if you could show them that, you know, over time their kids are going to get better, more creative, they're going to be better leaders, and that would be something pretty powerful, I'd imagine, for the parents to at least sit there and consider, and some information for them to chew on.
Yeah, it's something I'm probably not the best at is capturing and promoting. Not that we want to keep it secret squirrel. People said you should be championing this and some other things that you do. And maybe it's not in my nature as such, but it's an element of, yeah, as you said, how do I not sell it to the parent, but there's been some really good feedback recently around pack players, you know, in relation to even just pre-academy on the Saturday. That's quite often the kids will be more enthusiastic about going on a Friday night than the next day to their session because of the format, or they don't experience that in their normal week where they have, you know, organised team training anyway.
I've got no doubt. And for some of those kids who are predisposed to anxiety, those kids will be so much more at home on the Friday night than they would on the Saturday on the game. And it's not either or, it's a combination of all of these things, isn't it?
I think so. I think you need some structured learning at anything in life, but I think you also need space to explore and fail and figure out why I failed without necessarily the feeling of the repercussions, whether that actually happens or not, and interacting with different people rather than just always the same. You know, there's so many variables that, you know, we all need to go through and experience to improve in any aspect.
Is there a component of the club that sees how they can lead other areas in the community? Because you talked about championing this particular thing that you do on a Friday night, yet it's not really seen. Because I can just see so many advantages of shining a light on that and, you know, taking it down to the local club here in New Zealand and saying, look, like, this is what Victory are doing, and this is why perhaps it might start a conversation across sports too. Like, so powerful.
Awesome.
Yeah, I'd even love to create an environment where there's multi codes in one space. Yeah. So if we take the facility we have, say there's three fields, a big field, small field, and a tennis field, they come along and it's a space where, you know, the tennis club and the football club and the cricket club say have the same, you know, this is your 1 hour time slot for your age group, come and interact with the kids of other sports, and then, you know, you have a go at other sports, or, you know, this, how do you maybe incorporate, you know, hockey and football. Maybe it's on the, maybe you play football on a hockey field, different dimensions, different lines, you know, that cross sport pollination, but just cross ideas. And
And also the integration of the physical into these spaces. I think about the ultimate facility for young people to grow all of the time, and this is the dream, is to have something along these lines. It sounds like you're on the way, like, and I'm thinking, man, I would have a climbing wall in there on the side. I would have some monkey bars there. I would have a parkour set up there so kids can come in and out of playing football, and they're getting exposed to all of this great movement skill as well.
I think it will happen in New Zealand before it will happen in Australia. I honestly,
really?
I honestly believe that. New Zealand is so far ahead in terms of my space in Melbourne around collaboration, interaction, sharing of ideas, sharing of concepts, testing things out without necessarily feeling they have to be successful. But also just opening the doors to come and have a look. Whereas a lot of what I have seen in my time in Australia, or Melbourne specifically, is it's quite a closed off, this is my little castle. And that can be around promoting players for a trial. You know, they might be at a local club and they don't want to lose their best player to potentially Melbourne Victory because it's their best player and it's their little thing. Whereas New Zealand, you know, again, this comes back to where we started from. I've been so lucky to be in rooms with All Black coaches or with, you know, club-based netball coaches. And we're all in the same room sharing ideas and hearing the same sort of problems. But, you know, we can take away and apply it to our own space. Where I've only been in one room in the 4 years I've been in Melbourne, which was facilitated by Tennis Australia, which was across the road from Amy Park. And various people got up and presented for 15 minutes. So I got to hear the Melbourne Storm Pathways manager speak. You know, our football director spoke around our academy structure. The tennis netball guy came and spoke, and we had a guest speaker from AFL. But apart from that, very hard to gain access to those sort of rooms because everybody's, you know, busy, I get that, but also quite protective of their own IP. Where in New Zealand, it's, yeah, this works for me, but, you know, may work for you, but go and try it. I remember Steve Hansen, Graham Henry, said when he was the Blues coach, all the Super Rugby coaches got together the following year, and he goes, here's what we did last year. We won, and this is it. This is our game model. This is our strategy. This is how we did our set pieces. Have it. It might help you, it might not, but we're not going to do it next year. We're going to evolve again. Yeah. This is last year's work, so we've evolved. Yeah. But here, have it anyway.
That culture of innovation, though, leads to that type of narrative where it's, you know, what we do is not important. Like, there's no point in holding on to it because it's going to change, as you say. Right? And that's the way we do things. I think, funnily enough, we've had an alumni from AUT come back and speak to some of our students recently. And she spent 10 years over at Aspire, or Qatar, and working in quite high up in the women's sports space. Anyway, she comes back to New Zealand and I asked her the question, what's one thing that you've seen change in New Zealand since you've been away? And she spoke to this idea of New Zealand becoming more insular in the way that we interact, which is interesting. So I think we have to be really careful that we don't follow other nations and lose that, because I agree with you that it's our competitive superpower. You know, that number 8 wire, we're going to have these conversations across codes, across domains. We're going to think differently because we have to, because we're so small.
So far away and smaller budgets. And
yeah, exactly, yeah. Right? Yeah, super important. Is there anything that, you know, you use to guide the way that you coach? Like, I'm always interested in, you know, first principles or things that anchor you to the way that you do things. Where are you at in that thinking, and what's influenced that over time?
Yeah, I think I think my style is the same. I think I guess I have two coaching hats to wear. It's high performance role with our professional team, where it's about preparing a set of players to perform and win on the weekend. And even within that week, the focus might be slightly different. It could be a recovery element, or it could be a technical element, physical, tactical, whatever. But it's about ultimately executing your role within the bigger team. And if I'm coaching within our development pathway, it's certainly not about performing now. It's about helping develop certain tools to perform in the future. So I think the first thing that I always think about is who's in front of me, what's the context, what's important today. And those are quite different. Where I think sometimes coaches of development players think it's about performing to win tomorrow. That could be the case, but I think my own personal belief on that is, you know, it's the only team that needs to win is the team at the top of the tree. And in our context, that's Melbourne Victory men's and women's A-League teams, where everybody else is actually irrelevant if you win. I think that the learning from the competition is important, but you know, everybody wants to win and you should strive to win. We're playing a game at the end of the day. No one sets out to lose a game. So I think, yeah, well, who's in front of me and what do they need from me today? Which can change within those contexts. And then I guess my style of coaching is high standards. I don't think, I think a high standards, even working with a 12-year-old, is transferable to as a professional player. Like, why would I allow things to drop or to slip? Obviously, you know, the timing of that and how I, you know, would bring that back to line might necessarily change. And I like the use of questions and kind of guided discovery. I think working in the female space now for a number of years, it resonates well with female athletes. They like to understand why I'm doing something. So through question and answers and guiding them towards an end product rather than necessarily showing or telling or expecting that this is how it's done, I don't necessarily think that floats in the women's space. Even the boys' space, I think you'll have a variety of different learning types and personality types. Some like to be told, some like to be shown, and some like to just figure it out themselves. So, yeah, trying to meet the needs of the player is, I guess, fundamental to also who's in front of me, and knowing that, you know, some people learn through seeing and some people learn through by doing, and trying to, you know, use words and pictures. So using a whiteboard, demonstrating myself if possible, let them have a go at it and then come back and let's discuss what you learned, and then, you know, trying to, I guess, be a little bit diverse in my coaching, but also patient and guide them on that journey rather than this is how it's done.
And does Victory have a very clear guideline around principles of play? So one of the things that came to mind when you were talking about guided discovery or questioning for understanding, for example, was the type of player that you would like to see evolve over time. And so someone that likes to be told what to do, but yet needs to align to quite a creative problem-solving type of play. Like, do those things line up? Or like, what have you seen? Are there certain players that you need to work with quite deliberately to get them to engage with inquiry, for example?
Yeah, so there is a preferred playing style, I guess, within our two professional teams. And therefore, our pathways leading up to those professional teams, we want to ensure that those players have the best, you know, opportunity to develop those certain competencies within their roles in that team. So it is broken down into, you know, strikers need to be able to do X, Y, and Z in this style of play. So there are, you know, very clear principles, but how the coaches develop those skill sets is still very much up to the coach, the personality of the coach, the beliefs of the coach. If we take the boys' academy, our 14s and 15s are in the development phase, 16s, 17s in the performance phase. So even just that delineation of phases and the language around development performance sort of lends itself to, you know, the first two teams are, we don't care about the result at all. And the next two age, it's around learning to perform. So there's some subtle shifts within that. But the language should be uniform from 14s all the way to the first team. And whether that changes over time when the new first team coach comes in, that's to be yet to be seen, but at the minute it's set from sort of top down, but also bottom up in terms of approach. But again, very specific to the way that, you know, I might coach different to you, but we have a framework to work within in terms of our curriculum.
Yeah, interesting. And so it sounds to me like it's still driven via the head coach. I remember when Owen Eastwood was on the show, who works with lots of organizations and teams across the world around developing environments with a strong sense of belonging, and he's done some work with the FA, and he spoke about the importance of alignment throughout the pathway and things like language. And it would seem to me, if you go to the effort of creating a system like that, then it shouldn't be dependent on the person at the top.
Yeah, and maybe it wasn't quite clear enough. The language, the tasks, the framework, the stages is set up by our academy manager or head of football, who, you know, reports, you know, the A-League men's ones would report into them. But the separation is those two head coaches are coaches of programs that need to perform to win tomorrow. And they might have three players out injured or suspended. So they may need to pivot on this given week based on what's in front of them to play a different style, a different shape, whatever they need to do to get the result today. And then they would refer back to our core general principles won't change.
Right.
But therefore everybody below that is working towards it. Well, these are our core principles and language and everything else. So yeah, the top two teams are hopefully reflections of those principles that have been developed throughout the academy pathway structure, but have the freedom to pivot where required.
Yeah, that makes sense. What about with parents? Are you communicating these principles to your parents? And if so, how do you do it? Because that's one of the pieces that is coming out in the discussions that I have about parents, the inclusion of parents and the collaboration that I believe is required. One of those key pieces is to communicate how things happen around here. How's that going over the ditch?
Yeah, I'm a huge believer that the parent has way more influence over the player than the coach can ever do through spending, you know, 23 more hours potentially in the day than the coach can. So I can only speak from a pre-academy perspective, the space that I'll you know, drive more than the academy. So each week would be a different topic. So let's say last week was proactive defending, for example. So we would send out on our communication platform to the parents, you know, generally 7 a.m. on a Saturday morning, they'll get a notification. Week 7, proactive defending. Here's the key coaching points that your son or daughter will experience today. So point A, point B, point C, 3 points only. Ideally use this sort of information to have a conversation either like on the way to the session, like, hey, today's proactive defending, these are things you're going to be experiencing, or post, hey, how was the session today? And hopefully, you know, the son or daughter can refer back to some of those three key messages that the coach would deliver through that session. So trying to ultimately engage in dialogue around something that's quite purposeful and specific from the learning rather than just generic, how'd you go today, what did you enjoy? So trying to get the parent to help us as the coaches with that young athlete's journey towards, you know, not necessarily mastering, but improving that specific set of skills for that week. So yeah, engaging the parent in that process is something that we try to do as often as we possibly can.
It makes a lot of sense. Intention, action, reflection, a fairly fundamental way of thinking about learning. What platform do you use? And I know this is in the weeds, but...
yeah, it's called Team App.
Right.
Which is just, yeah, a platform that you register, you log in, you get given a certain group to join, and then part of the administration that I'll work through is putting everybody into the correct group and, yeah, just fire that information out.
And so is that you sending out
yep.
those messages Saturday morning?
You can schedule it to go right. out at any time. So throughout the week, I'll post that ready to go.
Are there any other pieces of that that's been really helpful to try and get everybody on the same page?
I guess at the end of every semester we have a reflection document, but like a report card, which we have tried to gamify a little bit through the, you know, the studies around gamification and interaction. So each week would have, you know, level 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. So we, you know, the level one would be, you know, the fundamental player task associated to that topic, and then two is a little bit more progressive, and five would be the most complex. So of the seven topics, is out of 35. So we'll, you know, color code where we think each player is demonstrated across the semester. So each semester is two terms. Each semester you would have the same session twice. And then trying to, you know, provide them a score. And the hardest thing about providing a score is educating the parent that, like, don't stress about you've got 17 out of 35. This is, you know, a bit of a rough checkpoint in time. But here's some of the whole aspects that we want, you know, Johnny to hopefully improve. You know, if you're a five in striking the ball, then, you know, maybe don't need to go and spend time on striking the ball away from our pre-academy, but maybe a 1v1 defending element, you might be at a one, very novice. You can be quite competent in certain areas and novice in others. Doesn't make you a competent player or a novice player. You're a developing player. So providing these more accurate or more engaging tools to the player and parents twice per year, rather than just a general, here's some comments that we think your son or daughter can do. And the second part of that is, here's some questions that we ask the player to complete with help from mum and dad. So, you know, there's a piece there around role modelling. So who's your favourite player? Why do you like them? You know, it could be Mbappe. Why? Oh, because he's so fast. You know, do you want to therefore try and be like Mbappe as a winger? What else is Mbappe good at? Cuts inside and shoots. So can you go away and try and develop those skill sets, and you link to somewhere that they are quite passionate about initially? So yeah, some weekly contact point, slightly bigger piece at halfway through each year.
Do you get any feedback, or do you have conversations with the parents of how it's all going? And the reason I ask is, oftentimes it's hard to know how some of this stuff lands and whether it's actually having an impact or not. These conversations at home are happening or not. And if they are, like, the world is your oyster, I would imagine, in terms of the things that you can start having conversations about. Growth mindset, for example. While that's pretty hot topic at the minute, and you'd need to dig into some examples, like all of these things, that it goes back to our discussion about, you know, the psychology of what we're doing and how powerful it would be to start those conversations as well.
Yeah, the weekly posting on TMAP around, here's some simple idea, that actually came from one of the parents. They're like, how can I help Johnny, you know, improve? What can I do at home? What do you learn? What's he learning here? Not that we want to keep the parents away during the session, but all of our facilities have a waist high sort of fence, and parents must stay off the field. And, you know, we encourage them to not necessarily try and influence your son or daughter from the distance. Let the coaches do what they're employed to do and trained to do. But they want to be part of that process. So that's where that kind of started. That was direct feedback from a request from a parent to help. We have six different centres operating Saturday morning, Saturday afternoon, and a Monday night. So I'm not present at every centre every week. So I guess there's a tier below me. I call them the pre-academy lead for that facility. So they're more the interface with the parents from a week-to-week contact. So they will probably receive a lot more of that positive and negative feedback. So I catch up with both those two main leads each week. We have our own, you know, WhatsApp group that we communicate daily around various things. So they feedback some of those positive things and negative things. So we're always trying to shape the program to improve and evolve. And yeah, I guess with the end mind, and it's probably three objectives, reality and realistic, is to develop the player, make them feel part of a club. So, you know, the club is more than the men's and women's first teams. It's a development program. It's our interactions in the community. It's being a fan. And then it's keeping them in the game for longer. That's, you know, probably the third, but, you know, probably my personal driver, whereas the club is probably around having them as a member and come along and support the two teams. And then thirdly, you know, develop and improve.
Is there anything that you've changed your mind about, you know, that over the last, or your time at the Victory, you were pretty hell-bent on at the start, and now you've done a 180?
180. maybe not a 180. I think going in there, this is probably a natural response to a new environment and sitting, you know, trying to show that you can, you're confident in your own abilities and create some sort of change. I think we were quite rigid around, this is the curriculum. This is how it needs to be delivered. You know, here's a set of player tasks and questions, and let's make sure across all the different venues that each session is, you know, a mirror of each other. So now, as long as the key messages and the framework or structure of the session still looking like it's a play, an element of coaching, and then finishing with a play element, as long as that still remains, I think how each coach gets across the message is perfectly fine how they want to do that. I don't think, you know, I'm the role model to deliver that session, and people aren't me. No one else is me. No one else can necessarily see or think or communicate or, you know, present the same message or ideas as me. So don't try and be a mini me. Actually go and be your own self. And I think that's really helped our younger coaches, you know, learn and develop their own kind of identity around how they want to coach and how they see coaching and how they, what works for them and what kind of interaction with their players they have. We've got a very vast variety of staff and personalities, quite autocratic style coaches and then quite laissez-faire, you know, we'll just facilitate the session and not necessarily intervene too much. So I don't think there's a right or a wrong. I think I've moved away from it needs to look and feel like this to trust that the message and the improvement's happening, and how that happens is the art of the coach.
Yeah, it sounds quite similar as to how you interact with your players, the need to interact with your coaches and the people that are facilitating those environments needs to align, doesn't it? Really, really important. I've got a couple of questions as we wind this one down. The first being, how do you think about balance? There's a lot of talk in New Zealand. We have our Balance is Better strategy coming out of Sport New Zealand. And so for you, whether it's from a personal point of view or in your role at the Victory for the people that you serve, how do you think about balance?
Yeah, I've always believed it's critical. I think, talk about me as a coach or as a person. I need an escape from work and football or whatever. I've been fortunate to be full-time in football now for 15 years. And I kind of got into it because I loved it so much. I also played and I've coached and my friends were football. And I realised fairly early on that, man, I'm surrounded by football. I can't get away from it. So I had to create space where I'm doing something different. So I would say no to playing social five-a-side futsal because it felt like football. I would go and do golf. I would, you know, read a book. I would just do anything just to create that gap between what's always front of mind, because I'm always kind of still thinking about recruitment or could we do this different. And so it's trying to, you know, find space where I can get away from it, unplug. So yeah, the balance of, you know, people would say work-life balance. I just think it's life balance. I think your balance of, you know, education, life, family, employment, hobby. I think you just need to find what works best for you, and what works better for you to balance may not work for me. So I think finding that, yeah, personal balance is really important, because it kind of goes back to that conversion of talented or better than average players, you know, may not always convert. So it's, you never know who's going to kick on. But I've seen a lot of people get burnt out with whatever activity and just hate it. And there's probably one player that really comes to mind. She was the captain of the New Zealand under-17 team a few years ago that won bronze at the World Cup. Came away with me at the under-20s. And there were some warning signs fairly early on in that space where she was falling out in love with the game and didn't enjoy the training, didn't enjoy necessarily the pressure of performing, and didn't want to be captain, and you know, did really well at a young age, and she's no longer playing football. And that's not necessarily on us, but I think we could do a lot more to help ensure that she had a better balance as a 16-year-old in her life as being a 16-year-old person, plus education, plus football at a decent level, and we've lost her to the game. At the minute, she might come back in, but in terms of helping the Football Ferns in a home World Cup, you know, 4 years ago, she would have been right and part of that puzzle, but she's now not even playing social sport, I believe. So, yeah, I think having that conversation and being aware that people's balance is different, I think, is really important.
And so that really sort of dovetails into my last question, Gareth. So from your point of view, what is youth sport for?
I think it's a vehicle for growth is how I would describe it, for athletes and coaches. And I'm not a parent myself yet, but I'd potentially say parents as well. I think it's a space to evolve. Could be involved, obviously, the sport-specific skills, but also, you know, the interactions with others, you know, creating friends, traveling, time management, preparation, like so many life skills. I think youth sport is a fantastic vehicle to improve it into adulthood and the skill sets that you need to have to navigate the world, be successful in the world and whatever that is. And most people won't be in sport. Most people will never earn money from professional sports. So, but I do believe it's so important and so valuable to be part of, I think, team sport and individual sport. I think they're the same, but they're different. I think experiencing both just helps create a more rounded person at the end of the day. And I think as a coach, you know, very different as well, planning, organization, communication to people above and below, adapting, you know, different qualities. Not many other environments will provide the diversity around those as youth sport does, I believe.
Well, this has been really enjoyable, Gareth. Thanks so much for taking the time. It's gone places that I wasn't expecting, but have thoroughly enjoyed. So I know you're in New Zealand for a bit of a break, so I appreciate you taking a couple of hours out of your time and coming on the show. Kia ora.
Yeah, many thanks. Appreciate it. We'll be right back.